Now on 2CC, more stimulating talk, opinions and inspiring stories. This is the City News Sunday Roast on 2CC.
Well, it's Nicole Overall and Canberra City News editor Ian Meikle with you for the Canberra City News Sunday Roast, in case I hadn't mentioned that previously. Thanks for being with us.
You're getting the hang of this.
I'm getting the hang of this finally, two months later. Yeah, thanks. And we'd love to hear from you too. You can give us a call, 6255 1206, text 0488 266 266, or via the website 2cc.net.au. And now we're looking at a really important issue that potentially isn't as widely known about as it should be, and that's arthritis in those under the age of 24. And we're going to be talking with, on the line from Sydney, Professor Ruth Colagheri, and also in the studio we have with us a juvenile arthritis sufferer, Amity, and her mum, Catherine. So first, good morning, Professor Ruth.
Good morning. Thank you very much for talking about juvenile arthritis on the Sunday Roast.
Yeah, no, thank you. It's great to have you on, and of course to welcome Amity and Catherine as well. Lovely to have you with us this morning.
Mm. Could I jump in, and Ruth, could I ask you, what is juvenile arthritis? I'm sorry we've got to start at the base level, but it's something I wasn't overly familiar with, and it is a real condition.
Absolutely, yes. Not many people are familiar with it, and that's the problem we're trying to resolve. So it's an autoimmune disease that attacks the joints and the eyes and sometimes the skin and sometimes the internal organs. Mm. Its official diagnosis, or part of its official diagnosis, is that it occurs before the age of 16. But, of course, some people have undiagnosed juvenile arthritis that isn't under that age, but is diagnosed later. Mm. And also, half of all children who get this disease, it carries over into adulthood. So that figure that was mentioned about under 24 or under 25-year-olds up to 24, is there's 30,000 young people aged from 0 to 24 in Australia who have this condition. So it is quite common, although it's often thought to be rare.
Now, the news point this past week has been that the Federal Health Minister Mark Butler has announced major federal funding for the first time in a nationwide program to shorten unacceptable delays in diagnosing juvenile arthritis. What are those delays, and what's the consequence of a delayed diagnosis?
And we're very grateful to the federal government for this funding because juvenile arthritis has been quite neglected, so that for generations, and it's generations behind the other, equally common and serious childhood diseases. And the problem is that children don't get diagnosed early, and so they miss that window of opportunity to get onto the effective treatments. And we do have effective treatments available, although, you know, some of them come with side effects and are a bit tough on the kids, but mm-hmm. they do prevent the joint damage and eye damage if the child can get diagnosed and referred to a paediatric rheumatologist and get onto the treatment in a short time frame. So the current average delay is 10 or 11 months, and that has not changed in 25 years and probably beyond, but the evidence we have is only up to 25 years ago. And so for many children, it's actually, you know, if that's the average, obviously for many children, it's much longer than that. And so children do, fortunately, not commonly, but not uncommonly either, turn up on referral to a paediatric rheumatologist and have eye damage from the uveitis, which, if it's undetected and untreated, it can lead to loss of vision and even to blindness, although fortunately, if you're on treatment, that's prevented. And also to joint deformities, which can be permanent if they're not picked up and treated early enough. And, of course, that spills over into a lifetime of, disability and, mm-hmm. not good life chances in terms of employment and the opportunities that those of us who enjoy good health take for granted. So it's a very, very serious problem, and we're really delighted that the government's allocated this funding.
Well, I agree with you, delight. The shock to me is that for 25 years of certain knowledge, it can take up to 10 to 11 months to diagnose effectively children sitting in surgeries trying to explain that they're in pain to doctors. Is the GP the blind spot in this process?
Well, I wouldn't call the GP the blind spot, but there's very low health professional awareness all around, and that can extend to, you know, GPs are important because they're the gatekeepers to specialist services and they first line of point of contact for people with a health problem. But it also applies to orthopaedic surgeons. These kids often get sent to orthopaedic surgeons, to sports doctors, to general paediatricians who are not aware of the problem. Sometimes they go to physios, especially, you know, maybe not so much little kids who are two or three, but older kids, because people think it's a sports injury or they think that, you know, they've injured something. But the, you know, the lack of awareness means that often the parents are told it's just growing pains and it'll go away in a couple of years.
Yes, and that's certainly one of the things that, you know, I remember my sons when they were younger talking about that, you know, legs and arms and tingly, and you'd always, as the parent, just say, oh, it's growing pains, and that's normal, and to know that, you know, perhaps there is something more to it and taking that seriously.
Yes, that's right. So growing pains are a real thing. I have asked the paediatric rheumatologist about this because I actually wasn't sure. It is a real thing, but it can be quite easily distinguished between the symptoms of juvenile arthritis, which are, you know, quite consistent and come back over and over again and are very painful, you know, with no injury, and it doesn't go away. It's worse in the mornings, especially in the wintertime, and so it is quite distinguishable. And so I think that's the trick for us with this program, is to make sure that we provide, you know, GPs and others with the information and tools that they need that will help them to, first of all, recognise that there's a possibility of juvenile arthritis, and then to go on, you know, through taking the history and the physical examination to determine whether the probability that it's juvenile arthritis is high, and if it is, then they need to refer to paediatric rheumatologist for a definitive diagnosis, because the one thing, it's easy to diagnose, but the one thing about it is that it doesn't have a definitive blood test. So that sort of makes it a little bit more tricky for GPs and others to diagnose.
Ruth, how do you get it?
Oh, it's unknown. The cause is unknown. Okay. It's like most autoimmune diseases, like autoimmune anemias, juvenile diabetes. It's just completely unknown. Which there does seem to be a little familial trend. Certainly is in my family that, as you're probably aware, my husband and I started the Juvenile Arthritis Foundation because our granddaughter got juvenile arthritis when she was 6, and she's now 12. And nobody else in family, I mean, I've got osteoarthritis, but nobody else in family has juvenile arthritis, but there are some sort of members of the throughout the family who have some mild autoimmune disease. So there is, you know, you don't necessarily inherit it, but there is a little familial tendency there. And this is exactly the same for diabetes and type 1 diabetes in children, and nobody really knows what causes it.
Let's go to Catherine and Amity now. Catherine, could you explain how you discovered Amity had, I was going to say caught it, had got it, had acquired it?
Thanks. So Amity was diagnosed at age 10. Again, similar to what Ruth said, we actually don't have any family connection to any sort of any autoimmune sort of diseases within our family. It started with a swollen toe, funnily enough. So it got to the point where she couldn't walk on her foot. We took her to the hospital and they said, look, it could be a reaction to an insect bite or something like that. They did the funny little black pen circle around where they thought it was infected and said, look, if it spreads outside of that, come back, let us know. Oh. And we went back.
Oh.
And by that point, Amity was getting pain in her toes and in her feet. And in her ankles as well. So we were persistent in going back to really find out what the diagnosis was, because I just felt that something wasn't quite right.
Amity, running around the playground would have become impossible for you at age 10.
Yeah, when I got diagnosed, it made going to school and even just getting up in the mornings really difficult with all the pain that was going on in my joints.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, especially not having a reason why it was happening, and, like, the doctors not giving reason why it was happening and just kind of dismissing it when the pain was kind of there and continuous.
So you were living the pain, but you didn't feel that the doctors were getting the message?
Yeah, so it did take a while for me to kind of get diagnosed and then eventually get treated for the condition, which wasn't great.
How long did it take, Amity, from when you first noticed yourself that there was a problem and before you feel that it was being addressed?
I'd say it was around 4 months from when my toe started hurting till when I got diagnosed and started getting treatment.
So that must have been really difficult for you as well, thinking that it potentially wasn't being taken seriously and that you possibly could have worried that, is it all in my head, and but it was really going on for you. That must have been really tough.
Yeah, it wasn't great. Well, because the pain was there, they didn't have a reason why it was there and it wouldn't stop. So until I got diagnosed and they started treatment, it didn't really stop and it was just always there.
But Catherine, you didn't take any prisoners. I mean, we hear from Ruth that it can take 10 to 11 months. You succeeded in getting a diagnosis in 4 months. How did you do that?
I think just being really persistent. I was at, I guess, an advantage at the time, and this is what a lot of our families face, is I was actually working part-time, so I had the flexibility to be able to be really persistent and make those phone calls and stick with, we're trying to find a solution for this, because, as Amity said, it sort of started in her toe, but it moved into her joints quite quickly. So by the time she was actually diagnosed, she had pain in her feet, toes, ankles, knees and hips. Obviously with the hips, it actually led to having bilateral steroid injections into her hip joints to try and get it under control before we started the permanent medication.
Is this typical, Ruth? Is this a typical story?
Yes, it is a typical story. In fact, you know, for some children it is, well, obviously it takes a lot longer and it is worse insofar as they get sent to, you know, maybe an orthopaedic, maybe a sports doctor who refers them to an orthopaedic surgeon who does, you know, painful and expensive tests, you know, not wittingly, but, you know, trying to find the cause. And the child goes through considerable anxiety. The child goes to additional pain of invasive procedures on top of the pain they're already experiencing. And sometimes, unfortunately, parents give up. So, and then the child turns up years later. I have heard case studies from paediatric rheumatologists where the child turns up years later with permanent disabilities. So, you know, missing the diagnosis had terrible repercussions, consigning a child to a life of pain and disability. Mm. So, and as I said, I mean, nobody does this wittingly. I don't think anybody, you know, wants children to suffer, but it is really vital that we get this changed for once and for all.
Because growing limbs will grow not in the correct way.
Exactly.
Let's go to a bit of a break. If you can stay with us, please, Professor Ruth Collegiuri, who is the founder of the Juvenile Arthritis Foundation Australia, because we have some more questions and interesting chat to have about how some of these things might be pointed out, what people need to look for, and what's going to happen as part of that funding. So stay with us. Well, thanks for joining us, and we're talking about a really, really important topic that needs much more awareness and education, and we have on the line from Sydney Professor Ruth Collegiuri, who's the founder of the Juvenile Arthritis Foundation Australia, and we also are very privileged to have in the studio with us 16-year-old Amity, who is a sufferer of juvenile arthritis, and her very tenacious mum, Catherine. Ruth, if we can go to you and just to ask, how big a problem is debilitating juvenile arthritis in terms of the numbers that it affects?
The numbers of children that juvenile arthritis affects is 6,000 to 10,000 nationally.
Wow.
If you're asking about the number of children who are debilitated by it, nobody knows. So we don't have primary data on that. The Australian Institute of Health and Welfare put out a new report last year on juvenile arthritis, but they don't, I mean, they use data sources, but there is no primary data on this because, again, like with the disease and the services and the treatment and the early diagnosis, the research has also been neglected.
What will happen, of course, with your education program that's now been funded through the federal government is that there's a good chance the numbers will go up. And that's got to be a good thing, hasn't it?
Absolutely. So the numbers that are known will go up. So as you and I speak today, now, there are literally hundreds of kids out there who have got the inflammation gnawing away at their joints and eyes who are undiagnosed. There'll be a lot more of those, you know, a lot more developing it in the future. Even if there's no particular increase in the disease, our population's increasing, so there will be more children turned up, and this will be a problem because we don't have enough paediatric rheumatologists. That's another issue that JAFFA being short for Juvenile Arthritis Foundation, is trying to address. So it will be a problem, and I think I might have actually forgotten the beginning of your question. I'm sorry.
That's all right. No, we were just saying that with the education program, we'll effectively increase the numbers, and that is not necessarily a bad thing because it'll more kids will be available to get appropriate treatment.
Yes, absolutely. Because with the early treatment, effective treatment, and we also want to get some more of the biologic medications that are the have actually revolutionised the treatment of juvenile arthritis. Which first, I think, came into Australia 20 years ago. And we want to get more of those onto the PBS because not every one of the medications we have available works in every child. So the bigger the range on the PBS, the more affordable access to treatment is, the better, of course. Mm. So getting people diagnosed, getting that window of opportunity opened up where we can get kids diagnosed and onto those treatments so they don't have problems in the future is the aim of the game. Because, you know, life with juvenile arthritis, even for kids who, do reasonably well, is tough. I mean, they have an average of 12 to 15% off school. So that makes it pretty hard. You know, a lot of lost educational opportunity. And if you lose opportunity for education, then obviously you lose the capability to gain good jobs later in life and, more likely to be dependent. Some of the treatments that and medical interventions that children have, particularly if they have complications, they're pretty scary, not very nice.
Well, let's go to somebody who lives it.
Mental health problems.
Yeah,
well,
let's talk to Amity again. Amity, you've wrestled with this from age 10 to now 16. How are you feeling these days? How do you feel now?
Well, my arthritis is mostly improved now. I'm on a medication which has been changed quite a few times over the years.
Yeah.
But this medication works well, but it has a negative impact on my mental health.
That's not good.
Because it's an injectable medication, mm-hmm. and because of my diagnosis over the years, I developed a needle phobia from getting some of the treatments and some of the immunizations to help protect my body.
Yep.
So now once a week I have to do an injectable medication, which the anxiety can cause me to throw up knowing I'm going to have a needle.
Oh, you poor thing.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's not
that's
the best.
Very uncomfortable. No, it's not the best.
No.
But physically, how do you feel? Are you keep up with school? Are you able to keep up physically at school?
So in the last couple of years, it's gotten a bit better. But when I was first diagnosed, especially, and in the couple of years afterwards, I would have a flare-up around once or twice a year,
mm-hmm.
where I wouldn't be able to go to school very often. I would be sometimes admitted to hospital because the pain was so bad.
Mm.
If I went to school, I had to get a wheelchair because walking around the school where I go to takes time and it's quite long. So it would cause too much pain on my joints.
Really?
Yeah, it was...
But how are you now at 16? Are you able to get around the school okay?
There's ways for me to get around a bit better, but it's improved to a point that I can get around. But because of the stairs, sometimes I do need to use the elevator.
Of course. Oh.
And Mum, it's difficult for the family as well, no doubt, Mum Catherine, and what you've all had to do to adjust to all of this.
Yes, and I think the challenge with juvenile arthritis is we sort of call it the invisible disease because it's not visible. It's not like you've broken a leg and you're in a wheelchair because you've got a cast on.
Mm.
It's, you're in a wheelchair because your joints aren't letting you and are painful to walk around. And so I think that's the challenge because you look at a child and you think they're not unwell or they don't have a chronic illness. And that's been challenging for Amity with friendships and things because sometimes they go, well, why are you so grumpy today?
Mm.
Well, I'm in pain.
Yeah.
So I think that invisibility of this, this disease of juvenile arthritis is the biggest challenge. And I think this new program of awareness is great because not only hopefully it will introduce a broader awareness in, the allied health professionals, But it will maybe also build a broader awareness in the community as well that, you know, a lot of these sorts of things are unseen illnesses, but they still have a major, major impact on your life.
Yes. And one of those things that obviously kids can grow out of it, but the statistics suggest that half don't, and it's how you manage that and deal with all of that. So
yes,
thank you. Thank you all so much for joining us. 16-year-old Amity, you know, brave, hang in there, yeah. And you know, you're doing an amazing thing just talking about what you're going through as well. So kudos to you. Thank you so much for joining us. Mum Catherine and Professor Ruth Collegiuri, who, of course, is the founder of the Juvenile Arthritis Foundation Australia, and for bringing this to, you know, people's attention. And, of course, if you'd like more information on juvenile arthritis, there is a website, www.jaffa.org.au. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you, Ruth.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for helping raise awareness. Thank you. Bye.
Happy to do so. And so now it's 20.2 degrees. We're almost on the knocker for 11:30 as we head towards some news headlines.